This is Jared Muha. I'm here on October 30th with Geraldine Matthew. Geraldine, to start off, can I ask you just to tell me a little bit about yourself and who you are?
Well, I'm Geraldine Matthew. I was Geraldine Shannon before I got married and became the Matthew. I come from Palm Beach County, a little place in the eastern shores of Palm Beach. I was a migrant farm worker. I'm the third generation of farm workers, of migrant workers in my family. And I continued to do farm work until 1972. I can remember as far as back when I was 3 years old traveling the season with my mom on what you call a traffic truck, a tramp truck. And it taken us from Belgrade, Florida, to the New York states to pick apples, beans, whatever state we were in, whatever the vegetable was. And in traveling back, we stopped in a little town called Mount Dora, and from Mount Dora to Apopka, and that's when we decided to stay here to work in the oranges, which was our first time ever picking oranges. And from there, we ended up staying here in Apopka. And I left home at the age of 13 and went out on my own, and been out on my own ever since. And from there I got married, and I ended up with 6 babies, 12 years of marriage, and then I divorced, and from there I had to take care of my kids and raise my kids alone. And I continued to travel, and in 1972, that's when I gave it up. I didn't want to put my children through what I had went through, changing schools every 2 or 3 months because you got to move to the next state to work. So we remained it here in Apopka, Florida. And from that I continued to work in the fields, cutting endive and packing corn and picking string beans and whatever else they had for us to do, working in the carrots. And from there, I just got tired of the farm work, and I went into doing the foliage work, potting flowers, and that I liked it pretty good, and I stayed there for a number of years. And then from there, I volunteered to work with the Farm Workers Association, and I landed a job with the association, and I worked there doing different types of jobs in the organization. And I started advocating for poor people's rights in Tallahassee, and that was one of the most awesome jobs I had ever had in my life. Just having a 10th grade education, it was really awesome because I never thought in life that I would land such a good job. And from there I started working after they laid me off because lack of grants. I started working with Orange County Health Department in the environmental protection, and I worked there with David Overfield for a few months, and then I got sick with my kidney. I worked from December until April, and the kidney broke down, and I had to stop working with them. I left them in June, and from there I got sick and sick, and I ended up on kidney dialysis. So right now, that's where I'm basically is. I'm on kidney dialysis 3 days a week. I just was told a month ago that my liver is gone. My heart, there's nothing they can do. So right now I have my good days, I have my bad days. And I just, you know, I have to accept what life throws at me and depend on the grace of the good Lord. So right now that's where I am. There's a lot of times if I'm able to go to the grocery stores, I always tell people my job is not finished because I stand in the grocery stores and I talk with people about the use of pesticide in the field, those that are still out there working. Mm-hmm. I talk with them and let them know that it's not finished. You know, you're still being sprayed with the pesticide if you're still in the fields.
Well, thank you for telling me all that. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a few things that I want to ask about, some now and some later. The first thing, You said you were 13 years old when you went on your own.
Yes.
So can you tell me, like, how that happened and what that was like, being 13 and on your own?
Well, the reason I left home when I was 13, because it was a stepfather, and he didn't treat my mom right, and I had a sister and a brother at that time, and he didn't treat them right. He was more like afraid of me because I used to threaten him all the time about if he would hit me, what I would do to him. So I didn't have to worry about getting licks from him, but he would beat my sister and beat my brother so bad. And my mom, she wasn't a violent person, and I just couldn't take it, seeing her not saying nothing at the way he was treating the family. Mm-hmm. So one day I just packed and I left. And I was tall. I was always a tall girl. So I could pass off for 17 years old, 18 years old, and that's mm-hmm. what I did. Mm-hmm. And I got a man and his wife to say they was my mom, and take me to the courthouse, and I got married. Mm-hmm. And when I got married, then I was, you know, it was better for me to be married. That way I continue to help my mom. Mm-hmm. And I didn't move from around my mom until after about 4 years I was married, and I moved to another town. Okay. But I would come see her every Saturday. Mm-hmm.
But you continued working in the fields?
Mm-hmm. I continued to work in the fields. Mm-hmm.
You just did it on your own.
Mm-hmm. It was hard, but, you know, having somebody to help you, it wasn't so difficult, because my thing was I always wanted to give my mom. I always wanted to make sure that my mom had, and I was able to help my mom. Mm-hmm. So after the marriage was over with 12 years, then I continued to work, but I was always able to go by my mom's house and give my mom money to help her. Because mm-hmm. my mom was a young lady when she took sick. She was 36 mm-hmm. when she took sick.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I wanted to ask about your parents, too. I mean, so your parents were farm workers as well?
Yes, my mom and my father were farm workers when they met. My mom was 13 years old and my daddy was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And when my mom got pregnant with me at the age of 13 years old, my father was afraid. And my father, he was big boy. Mm-hmm. And he ran off and lied and went into the military. Mm-hmm. So he was in the Air Force all his life. Mm-hmm. He made a career out of it. And in 1960, he come home, and everybody was saying that I was his baby, and he took a look at me and said, "Oh, yeah, that is my baby." And they said then he wanted to be a part of my life. Mm-hmm. But he went back into the Air Force, and then when he come back home, then when he began to fight my mom for a part of my life. So they took it to court, and the court gave him, I stayed 6 months with my mom in Belleville, and I stayed 6 months with my father in Miami. And my father was called by a mistake to go back into the military, and that's when his mama and his wife decided to send me home to my mom. Mm-hmm. And I never communicated with him again. When I seen my father again, it was 1972. Mm-hmm. He came here and visited me, and I haven't seen him again since. Mm-hmm. He went fishing in Miami, and he never was found again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you remember any stories that your mother or father had told you about their days working on the farms?
Yeah, my mom used to tell us about when they was children, and her mom and her father was together, how they would go to work. They was picking cotton, and how they would go to work and work days hours and hours in the cotton fields. Mm-hmm. She mostly talked about my grandmother, because my grandmother was a slave. Mm-hmm. And we talked about a lot of slavery in our house. Mm-hmm. Because of my grandmother being a slave. Mm-hmm. times. I mean, it wasn't no time back down generation. Slave was right at our back door.
Yeah.
And that's mostly what she talked about. She never really just do a lot of talk about herself as a little girl, you know. Sometimes she would tell us stories about how the crew leaders would try to do little nasty things and stunts and things. They were poor, you know, and how my grandmother would defend them and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and mostly talked about my grandmother, and mostly talked about her father, and mostly her grandfather. Her grandfather was, mostly talk of the family was her grandfather. He used to tell us stories about how funny he was, and how, you know, he after coming out the slave camps, he never taken crap off of anybody again, and how mean he was. And mostly what they talk about, even to today, they talk about my great-granddaddy, how, you know, how wild he got and, you know, just didn't want nothing wrong, to go, nothing in the family to go wrong,
mm-hmm.
all the way up till he passed away. But my family, they're originally from Georgia, Fort Valley, Georgia. And I used to have to go there after, if my mama didn't feel like taking us up on the season, she would take us to Georgia and leave me with my grandmother. So I would stay the months of June, July, August, and come back when school started in September.
Mm-hmm.
We would go back to Belgrade.
Mm-hmm.
But if we was traveling, we would go to school wherever we was.
So you mentioned that you would travel, you know, during certain seasons to pick in other states.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that. How did what you experienced in other states differ from Apopka?
It was much different from my home in Belgrade. It was much different from Belgrade, right? Because Belgrade was a very, very violent town. Very violent. And those states was more calmer. You saw more respect. In Belgrade, there was no respect at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because Belgrade was built up on people of all nationalities. It wasn't just the people from Belgrade. It was the people from all over the Caribbean island. And there was no respect. If you was a child in Belgrade, you knew everything that an adult knew when you were 6 or 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't nice. It wasn't nice at all. So when we travel to the other states, we see the children more respectable. It makes you feel a difference. You be like, wow, well, I can't be like that child, you know. And the schools was different because Belgrade schools, they wasn't segregated. And those schools up north, they were segregated. So you got a chance to go to school, go to a school, a minority school. And it was a big difference. It was like the first time you went, it was scary, scary, scary. And as you continue to go, then the children begin to talk with you and you begin to meet friends. But when you first go, first start, you are told, oh, you can't play with them little white children. You know, because that was the way the South was down here.
Yeah.
We didn't play with the children across the track. You know, we stayed on our side of the track and the whites stayed on their side of the track. So we didn't know the feeling of being with the white children. We didn't know that feeling.
Yeah.
So when I went up, traveled up north, then we connected with that. That was, to us, it was weird, you know. But then as we travel to a, we might be in, say, New Jersey, the children are one way in New Jersey, and when we get up to maybe New York, the children are different way, they have a different style. We had to adapt to that. But as we continue down through the years, then it became like nothing to us, you know, we were expecting it.
Right.
And it was all good. But I can remember the bad times when we travel and we was told that we would stop and we would buy gas, and then if one of the children needed to use the restroom, we were told we couldn't use the restroom. And by me coming from the deep south down here, coming up here, we'd have thought it were better, but it were worse in North Carolina.
Yeah.
You want to use the bathroom after you done purchased gas, they tell you to go out there in the cornfield.
Wow.
And that wasn't right with us, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't right. Okay. And it finally grew it on us, you know. It finally grew it on us. Mm-hmm. But we, as children, being a migrant worker, you really enjoy it. Because you're seeing things that you probably wouldn't have never seen if you wasn't a migrant worker.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like right now you travel from Florida to Georgia, you don't see any mountains. And back in our days, there were mountains. By the time you get to Savannah, Georgia, you got mountains, North Carolina on up. But now you don't see that like you did when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And children nowadays will never get the opportunity that we had, and that make me appreciate my life, because I got a chance to do something that children nowadays would never do. I got a chance to travel on the back of a truck full of women and children going up north. That was awesome. I got a chance to stop. When they stopped the truck, we would stop in the mountains, and we would go up in the mountains, and we would cook our food, and water would be coming down the mountain, and we would take baths in the water. Children would never see that now. But, you know, it made us feel good. It made us feel good, because the adult used to get mad. We out there, water running down the mountains, the streams, and we are washing our skin, and they're arguing. Because we were so happy, you know. We cooking our food and stuff, and we so happy, and they would argue because life was really hard for the adults that had children.
Yep.
To be on the back of a truck. They call them tramp trucks, because that's what they call us, tramps. We was either tramps or we was either maggot workers. We wasn't called migrants. We were called maggot workers. There go those maggot workers.
By who?
Hmm?
Who would call you that?
The people in the town where we was going. And then we would live on labor camps. Some of them would have bathrooms, and some of them wouldn't. And we would have to go down to the river to drink, get our drinking water from found the river. Once we locate the river, we come back. The children would locate the river. We come back and tell the adults that we located the river, and that the adults would go down and we would start getting water from the river, bring them back to the camp in buckets. And when the city people learned that the migrant workers from Florida are here, once the word get out, then there were some people from the city. Like there was a company in Maryland, Marita Bread, they would bring us bread on the camps. And there was another company, they made coats, they would bring us winter coats on the camp. They made sure we had socks on some of the camps. Some of the states we went in, they wouldn't give you nothing. But
And the crew leaders would provide these?
No.
No.
These
so.
Was people that hear that migrant workers are here working.
Okay.
And they would do that in hopes of when we would start working, we would come and spend our money to your store or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I see. So I wanted to ask about the labor camps, the quarters. I mean, what were the quarters like? Could you speak to what the quarters were like here in Florida that you observed?
Well, the places here in Florida was much better than the places, much better than some of the places traveling up north, because here in Florida you had the Florida Farm Working Bureau here, and they was on top of a lot of faulty living. But up north they didn't worry about you. They would take you in the woods. They mostly built their camps in the woods. And here in Florida every eye's on you. You know, so you can't get away with a lot of stuff that you can get away up north. Because I can recall in 1970, traveling to Michigan to pick cherries and apples. I can recall when we got there, we saying we going to the camp. There was no camp. The guy had chicken coops, what you put the chickens in.
Yeah.
And they was taking chickens out. And I say, what are they gonna do with them? Why are they taking the chickens out? And somebody whispered to me and say, that's where you guys gonna sleep. So they brought a cambridge. They put all the chicken coops in a line side by side in a circle like, and they brought a cambridge and put a cambridge on top. And yo, from here up is inside the coop and your feet hanging out, and that's where we slept.
Wow.
And finally, somebody came down and talked to the owner of the property, and that's when he began to build a shed or thing, a little building where we could go inside. So we had to go inside, but everybody was in one thing, and you had to put just a little sheet between you and the next family.
Yep.
And that's the way we slept that season. In Michigan. I can recall in Maryland, the crew leader had a horse stable, and it was a huge horse stable. I never seen one that big. And he parted off into rooms, and each family had their room, and that's where we slept. But the male child could not sleep with the females. Like my brother.
Right.
My brother had to go up in the loft.
Right.
And where they have all the hay at. And the men had to sleep up in the loft. And the women slept in the barn, what we call the barn.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of crazy ways we had to sleep. I mean, it was miserable.
Yeah.
Miserable.
But you stayed in quarters in Florida as well, did right or no?
No, I stayed in what they call a quarter. When I come to Apopka, they call it the graveyard quarters.
Okay.
And it housed migrant workers. But most of the people was like, had come here as a migrant worker and never left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they come here as a migrant worker and they lived in the graveyard quarters, but they never left.
Mm-hmm.
They just continue to stay there till they tore it down.
Okay. And who were they? Were they generally black Americans living
black
in?
Black Americans.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
At that time, it wasn't known Hispanic farm workers here. When I come to Apopka, it wasn't any Hispanic farm workers here. It was all African Americans. And when it got really throwed, was in 1990-something that they faded out African Americans. They got rid of them. I'm trying to think. And when before they closed the farmland down, they give us all our papers and told us that they would not need us anymore. But those that want to come out there and help clean up can come clean up. They, all of the black crew leaders, they laid them off, and they hired a Hispanic man from Pahokee, and he brought some peoples up here, and they replaced us. We demonstrated and demonstrated about it, but nothing ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
When we would go out there and try to get work, they wouldn't give us no work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still like that today. Once they replace us with Mexican workers, the Mexicans would not hire us, the crew leader would not hire us. But we get a job, we'll hire them, but they will not hire us. It's still that way today.
Great. So if I understand that correctly, you said at some point in the 1990s, they fired most all of the black
workers. They got rid of all the black.
And that's in Apopka?
In Apopka.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they replaced them with mainly
Hispanic.
Mexican or Hispanic mm-hmm. crew leaders.
Right.
And those crew leaders hired predominantly...
Nothing but Mexicans.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we got involved. The organization got involved. We went out there. We marched out there with Hispanic people. Hispanic people, there was Hispanic people that didn't like the idea, and they marched along beside us, you know, but they never hired us back. And right now, I don't know, have Jeannie taken you out to the, where the coin is, where they working in the coin?
Yeah.
But right now, out there with all African Americans doing all that work out there, but now it's nothing but Hispanic people.
Okay.
They just plumb out replaced us.
And do you know why they did that?
Well, my thing is this, and I tell people this all the time, and I used to say this before they replaced us, that one day we won't have a job. And people used to look at me crazy, and they say, what you talking about? I say, one day you will not be able to come out here on the muck and work. I say, it'll be all Hispanic peoples out here working. That was about probably 5 years before they replaced us. We hadn't heard nobody talking about replacing us. Uh-huh. But I felt that way because when the Hispanic people come around, the crew leaders, the crew leaders that own the piece of the job would always have a big conversation with them. And African Americans, I truly believe, was replaced because when they start working us, they started working us and giving us our money every day. When we leave the job in the afternoon, we are paid off. And if you pay me off and I drink, I'm going to come home and I'm going to drink up my money. And tomorrow I'm going to be sick and I'm not able to come to work. So your job is still going on, but I'm so sick because I done got my money overnight and I'm drunk, I can't come to work. That kind of stuff was going on. And there were many years you could see at the ending of the season, every season have an ending, there was a lot of crops to be thrown away because the manpower wasn't there to work it. Because you pay me every night, I feel like I ain't going to work tomorrow. I got me some money in my pocket.
Yeah,
that's the way I feel about it. I don't know how anybody else feel, but I feel that African Americans begin to lag on the job. You give them all that power, and now you want to snatch it down from them. So the best way to snatch it away from them is to replace them, and that's what they did. It was sad. The year they replaced them, it was sad because I was out there. I was still working.
Yeah.
And it was really sad. We didn't have no job. And if you was a person worked 7 days a week out there and they replace you and you ain't got nothing coming in, boy, it's hard.
Yeah.
It is hard.
Mm-hmm. So this was just for the recording. In 1996... through 1998.
It was in the 90s. I think it was in the early 90s.
But in 1996 to 1998, mm-hmm. a lot of the farms around Lake Apopka were shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But this was before that, you're saying, when the black farm workers were
replaced. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it was about 92, 93,
okay.
when African Americans was replaced.
Uh-huh.
And then right after that, the farm was shut down.
And do you remember?
Only one farm was left open. That's what they call the sand farms.
Uh-huh. And do you remember, so before that, while you were still working, what were relations like between black farm workers and Mexican farm workers or Hispanic or Caribbean farm workers?
There wasn't any relationship because if you go to work and a Spanish person is in what we call the stall, in one of the positions on the machine or whatever, he don't say nothing to you, you don't say nothing to him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you work, if he say something to you, then we try to, most African American people, probably my age and down, took Spanish in school.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to, comprehend the little Spanish that we took in school, good morning, how you doing, my name is this, and
right.
So on.
Right.
But if they don't say anything to us, we work all day and don't say anything to them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then there was a Mexican guy come around named Mexican Pete. He started getting organizing farm workers, and then he got a crew. He was the only Mexican he had a crew. But he went to school and he learned English really good. So all African Americans liked him.
Mm-hmm. When did you start noticing Hispanic farm worker, like a presence of Hispanic farm workers on on farms in Apopka and in Florida?
Well, on farms in Apopka, I start noticing them. A large percentage of them in 1989.
So that's when a lot had come, or a lot had, you had noticed a lot of them that had already been there, but now made up a large segment, or?
They was coming.
They were coming, okay. Okay. Did that change the workplace at all before a lot of the black farm workers were fired, as you say?
Did it change?
Yeah, I mean, was there something different about the workplace or the way the crew leaders treated you or anything like that?
No, it wasn't. They just come to us and just told us what it was going to be. And the crew leader told the crew leader, so the crew leaders probably held it under their belt a week, didn't want to tell us, and then finally it got out. Mm-hmm. And then when it got out, a lot of people didn't want to believe it, you know. But those like me that were smart and knew it was going to happen, felt like it was going to happen, went on and looked for a job.
Okay.
You know. And most of the farm workers, they had programs trying to get them to go to school. But a lot of farm workers could not go to school. Their hands all cramped all up like that with arthritis, and their feet and stuff all messed up from all the sores and stuff working on the farm.
Right.
And they just could not take. They was offering us typing classes and computer classes, and well, none of us computer literate at all. So
yeah,
it just was a mess.
Uh-huh.
So I landed a job taking people to school every morning.
Okay.
And picking them up in the evening for the trainings. But they knew that, the state knew that eventually they were going to be through with that. So the program closed down and left the people shut out again. So you kept promising us, they kept promising us and trying to open up doors. And the doors that they were opening up, like the computer classes, they didn't last long. The truck driving classes didn't, I can't tell you not a one man that got a job at the truck driving school.
Yeah.
Everything, wasn't nothing falling through. So right now, those of us that worked in the fields, all the promises that you made to us, right now, we don't believe nothing you gotta say. Don't come telling me nothing about, well, they're gonna open up a program and this program gonna help farm workers do this, because I'm not gonna believe it, because I've been deceived so many times. So that's where we are now. So most of the farm workers that work now, they're sick. They can't do nothing. They're on disability. Our young farm workers, you know, you done sprayed us with your chemicals all your life, all our life, because most children start working in the fields back in them days when you were 6 years old. You know, you take your children to work with you. But then when it got in the 80s, you can't bring your children in the field no more. The damage is done. I had a daughter, had a stroke at 3 years old.
Yeah.
But she was in the field with me every day.
Right.
You know? The damage is done. You done took them out there for a few years. And then in the 80s, they decided that they wouldn't let you bring your children in the field no more.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you said after a lot of the black farm workers were fired, most of them went to school on some program
to try to bring
more skills. Do you know what happened? So after they went to school, did some of them find jobs in other industries, or...
The only ones found jobs, the only African-American women
right.
that found jobs were because of me. Because there wasn't a list of who were hiring you. There was a list of where you could go and go to school to be retrained.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they claimed. It was retraining us into the other job fields. But what I did is I called different agencies that knew where women can get medical training. And a lot of women went to the medical training and they got jobs in nursing homes. They become what they call a tech. They got jobs in nursing homes. They got jobs in shelters for boys and shelters for the handicapped. And the men, they were hard for the men. But we got men that ain't work up until yet. And then they started dying. We lost a lot of farm workers. At points, you go to a funeral every weekend.
Yeah.
Somebody you work beside have died. Well, it was hard for a man to get a job. So the women became head of the house. And that's when they lost their hand with the children. No respect in the house. Because the man wasn't there to say nothing. Because you're not putting nothing in here. So the child looking at, you're not putting nothing in here. So you don't have no say here. So the bigger boy, they bullied his mama and all of that. So right now, there's a lot of crisis in people's home because the father was put out of work due to the closing of Lake Apopka.
Uh-huh.
They want to make Orange County this big metropolitan area. They swiped up all the orange trees. You can't go pick oranges. But when all of this stuff exists, you could take your children to the grow and make them work. I could take you on the street in Apopka right now with about 60 or 70 young men just standing on the corner. But they graduate from high school.
Yeah.
But they still live home with their mama. They don't think they got to go to work. They rule their mama house. But with me, it was a different story. Because your butt was going to go to work. You weren't going to live in here and don't work. You know? But a lot of parents were scared of the children. They were afraid. And up until this day, the young boys run their mama house. It hurt us. It hurt us, and I don't think that our leaders of our country understand that. I don't think they understand that and it's so easy. It's so easy to understand. You got to realize we come from slavery. We were whooped. We were ran down all our lives. Now you want us not to apply the same thing you did to me, not to apply to my child? So my child disrespect me. Because my child can say, I call the police on you. Police coming out, what they going to do? Handcuff me and take me to jail because I whooped his butt because he stayed out all night long. That's the way things are now. And it really hurt the parent. It hurt killing the parent. You can't be a parent in your own house. Mm-mm. I got a 22-year-old grandson here with me. He just come back here. Last Saturday morning, I woke up. He landed in my bedroom with a girl. I said, what is this? I called him out. I talked with him. This is no respect. All my life, I respect my children. Now, this is no respect. So I give him time period to get out of here. I don't have to tolerate with that. I don't have to tolerate with that. But you don't want to go look for a job. He do not go look for a job daily. He laying up in here. You can't. Lack of work causing a lot of problems in your home. And it's no work here for a young man.
Mm-hmm.
It's no work.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for telling me all that. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask about... we were talking about, you know, what a lot of farm workers did after they were either fired or after the shutdown of, like, Apopka Farms. For you, I know that you got involved in a lot of environmental justice work, and I was wondering if you could tell me about that.
Well, I was, like I said, advocating for poor people's rights for a long time. Very young kid with the organization. And when I started working with the environment people, Orange County, it was like a different ball game. I organized people to come to meetings where we could talk about the rights of farm workers, laws that needed to be put in for farm workers. The first law I worked with was giving farm workers the right to know what type of pesticide were being used in the work area. That was the first law that we fought for. finally, years of fighting in Tallahassee, years of walking the floor, they passed the law. Finally, they passed the law, giving us the right to know what type of farm work, what type of pesticide we were working in. After about 20% of African Americans in Apopka had passed away, and we continue to fight for other improvements, like drinking clean drinking water in the fields.
Right.
When I was there, there wasn't clean drinking water. We finally got that bill passed where we could have clean drinking water in the fields. Better working equipment for farm workers, like rubber gloves, rubber boots, raincoats, and stuff like that. Some of the companies got away with it, but some of the companies went on and bowed down and gave us the equipment, with the proper equipment we needed to work in. As far as going to the doctor, like accidents happen bad in the fields. And we would go to the company doctor. Finally, we managed to get around that and get better medical care.
Yeah.
When we get cut, sometimes, you know, we work with knives. And sometimes we get cut, like, you working here and somebody working there, they got their knife set up, and you doing this here all day, and your elbow hit the knife and bust it all open. You got to go to the hospital, and they don't take you to the hospital. They take you to a regular doctor, and he patch you up and send you home.
Yeah.
We finally got, you know, help with that. But a lot of changes. We see a lot of changes, but it's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
Still a long way to go. Because they're still using pesticide. They're still making pesticide. They're still using pesticide. Our babies are still being born deformed. So we have a long way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you've mentioned your kids and your grandkids a few times throughout this. I'm wondering how they perceived farm labor. Did any of them have interest in doing that, or?
Well, my kids work the fields.
Right.
All six of my kids work the fields. My grandkids never worked the field, because when they came along, I was stoned against them going in the fields. They came along at the end of the term, where children were no longer to go out there anyway. So they didn't get a chance to work the fields. But all of my kids did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And lastly from me, I think, I wanted to ask about the book Fed Up by Dale Finley Songwood. Could you tell me a little bit about that and your part in that?
Fed Up is a book that I'm proud of and I'm not proud of. The reason I say I'm proud of, because it was the first book that I ever had been involved in, and I'm not proud of is because I think that I left a lot out the book. And I want to do three versions of the book. So I had talked with, what's her name? Do a second version and a third version, but if I can do the second version, maybe I could capture a lot of stuff I left out.
Okay.
It's like I was saying, there's a lot I want to add to Fed Up, and I would like more pictures in the book, because people really need to actually see what our peoples are going through, the lesions on the legs, the feet, the amputations of the toes, the amputation of the feet, legs, because of all of the pesticide where it has deteriorated the skin. And I like to get more deeper into the labor camps. It's a lot that I left out because I wasn't thinking. I'm thinking that when the book was going to be rolled, it's going to be like a mini book. I didn't realize it was going to be a story, a nice book. I'm just looking at it like it's going to be, it'll be a little short mini book. And I imagine everybody that played a part in the book, about eight of us, I would imagine if everybody can really redo the story, it'll be more awesome than what it is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people left out stuff that should have been told, you know? There was a lot of death in our family due to the DDT that they used. People lost their family, and they didn't talk about that in the book. How we come from work and we riding on the bus, and when we get home, we think the person sitting over on the bus sleep, the person dead because of the chemicals that we worked in all day long.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that in the book. And I would like to, you know, let people know these things actually happen. You're going home from work, and when you get there, you holler, "Mr. Clyde, Mr. Clyde." And you, "Mr. Clyde, you think he's sleepy dead." You know?
Yeah.
Those things happen, and we didn't talk about none of that in the book. So we didn't know how much room or space or whatever we had in the book.
Yeah.
So I asked her about second and third version. And we didn't, a lot of stuff, when I read the book, or my part of the book, I wasn't pleased. I wasn't happy with the part that I wrote, that she wrote for me. And then I read the other people part, and I know their history. And same thing with them, you know, they don't talk about it. Because when you say, "Oh, we gonna write a book," you know, you never wrote a book before, so you're not thinking good. You
yeah,
know?
Right.
But if we can, you know, if the book can be redid, it'll be awesome.
Yep.
We left a lot out.
Well, is there anything, you said you there are things you wanted, wish you could have included. Is there anything that you haven't told me thus far that you want to include in this interview?
Well, in the book, I talked a little about the treatment of the African-American women and the crew leaders. Not the growers, the crew leaders. I talked just a little bit about that. That should have been brought wide open. It should have been blown up because a lot of young girls have babies they'll never know who the father of because the crew leaders and his, what we call henchmen, will come in and have sex with those girls like they was they woman, you know.
Yeah.
And we didn't express too much of that in the book.
Right.
You know, if you had a father that drank, a mother that drank, oh God, you ain't have nobody in your corner. The crew leaders do whatever they want to do. Mhm. Yeah. Mhm. I can recall one time. I was going, my mom had got me up early. Our day began by 5 o'clock, and she sent me to the store to get a loaf of bread. And there was a man waiting in the dark on me when I got to get the bread. And he jumped out at me and grabbed me, but I was so fast, I snatched it loose from him, and I ran home and I told my mom. And my mom went over there, and my mom jumped on the man and told him, "Don't ever try anything like that on none of her children again in life. She would kill him." And we never had problems with him again. But just imagine if I had a mama that didn't do that. Every time he saw me, he would have given me a problem.
Yep.
But my mama let him know that, you know, she was not taking no crap like that.
Right.
But then a lot of the girls, their mama never say one word, and it went over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for telling me that.
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to tell me before we conclude the interview?
That's about it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Geraldine.
Okay.
Again, this was Jared Muha and Geraldine Matthew on October 30th, 2014. Okay, this is Jared Muha with Geraldine Matthew on October 30th again for a second session interview. Geraldine, I wanted to ask, what is your impression of farms today in Florida and, you know, treatment of Latino workers who are on the farms?
Well, the farms today have changed very much because now most farm workers get their own place to stay. But as for the Latino workers, the women, the ones that are still housed in labor camps, they are treated really bad by the crew leaders. If they are undocumented and have daughters, the crew leaders think that the daughter should be their woman or their wife or their girlfriend, and they mistreat the women very bad. What brought that to my attention was when I was doing HIV prevention, going into the homes talking and passing out HIV materials on the camps, of how the men would treat the women when they try to get protection. They didn't want the women to get condoms from us, or female condoms from us, or whatever. So it's a problem to me because it seems like nobody really paying that Latino group attention, just like they didn't pay the African American group attention back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. So it kind of bothers me a lot, you know, seeing that happening, and seeing how the women have to take up the young children, and the young daughters, and run at night and try to find another place when the crew leaders come pounding on the doors and demanding that they open the doors and demanding for sex. I don't think that should be like that. And yes, it does disturb me.
Well, thank you for telling me that. Is there anything else you wanted to include?
That's it.
Okay. So this was Jared Muha and Geraldine Matthew on October 30th, 2014.